Welcome back, everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. I'm going to follow up what I discussed with some of you in the comment sections and the email concerning the last episode about our fathers or our loved ones. It don't necessarily have to be about our fathers. Could be about mothers, aunts, uncles, daughters, sons, anybody. But particularly the fathers. Because a brother gave an example how he's struggling with the connection or reconnecting with his father. And because we are following different laws, different statutes, different commandments, and walking in a new life that is causing strife or division within the households that we were born out of. Sirach 3, verse 1. Hear me, your father, O children, and do thereafter that ye may be safe. For Yahuwah has given the father honor over the children and has confirmed the authority of the mother over the sons. Whoso honors his father makes an atonement for his sins. And he that honors his mother is as one that lays up treasure. Whoso honors his father shall have joy of his own children. And when he makes his prayer, he shall be heard. Similar to if you're a husband, the head of the household, and you treat your woman well, your prayers are not hindered. He that honors his father shall have a long life, and he that is obedient unto Yahuwah shall be a comfort to his mother. He that honors his father shall have a long life. Abraham, and I only keep bringing up Abraham because it was evident that Abraham's father, Terach, struggled with the Babylonian worshiping of idols. And that Abraham, even though that he took an axe and broke down his father's statues or his father's idols, he lived a long life into his hundreds. A long life because he honored his father, but he also honored Yahuwah on top of his father. He that fears Yahuwah will honor his father and will do service unto his parents as to his Adonim. Honor your father and mother both in word and deed that a blessing may come upon you from them. And here we see the difference between Yaakov and Esau. When Yaakov did service unto his parents in deed and in truth. In deed and in truth and in love. And he received a blessing not only from Yitzchak and Rivka or Rebekah, but also from Abraham, because Abraham knew that this particular seed, this bloodline, would be called, and Esau wouldn't be called because of his deeds and because of the words against his father's commandments or statutes, especially when they told them not to marry women outside of their bloodline. And Esau went and married two Canaanite women who were abhorred by Rivka, his mother. And then he, of course, went off and married into the Ishmaelite bloodline. For the blessing of the father establishes the houses of the children, but the curse of the mother roots out foundations. Now, I haven't read anything concerning the curse coming from any mother, other than when Rivka told Yaakov that may this thing that Yahuwah created, as far as fooling Isaac or fooling Yitzchak and giving him meat, thinking it was Esau, it was Rivka to say, let this be on me. Let this lie be on me so that you could inherit the blessing. And of course, Esau's blessing was to basically tear up everything and to rule with the sword by death, by war, by power of his own hand. So it looks like a blessing, but it was more or less a curse upon Esau. Sirach 3:10. Glory not in the dishonor of your father, for your father's dishonor is no glory unto you. So even if your father is not following the law, statutes, commandments, and still not understanding your walk or not giving you place to show him your gentleness and patience in the Ruach, it is no means for any of us to either go online. I failed at this in the beginning. Before I read these verses, I failed at this. My thing was to, I was going to show everybody that I didn't have no favoritism when it came to the truth. So I was exposing my father online very early. I'm talking about, I want to say this is like around 2018, 2019 when I woke up. My thing was, okay, I'm going to spread all of the truth and I don't care who it touches. And that was one of my faults before reading this verse. Me dishonoring my father on social media or in plain public eye would be no glory unto me. Not the glory that I thought I was doing or attaining or going after. For the glory of a man is from the honor of his father, and a mother in dishonor is as a reproach to the children. My son, help your father in his age, and grieve him not as long as he lives. And if his understanding fail, have patience with him, and despise him not when you are in full strength. And if his understanding fail, understanding is that our parents come from a generation where they were in the curses. And they were brought up in houses that the curses were even deeper on their minds. So it's truly hard for us to pull back that veil and show them the truth or show them the light of this world, because this is the only world they've known. And it's the only world that they've struggled and found success in by doing it their way. Like I said before, when I talked about Babylon falling and what our women were doing, when they said that we will worship and praise and give drink offerings to the Queen of Heaven, because we did this at the time of prosperity in Yerushalayim. So why wouldn't we do it now? Because this is all we know. Like I said before, there is nothing new under the sun. And we quote that scripture a lot, but we truly have to find the examples of what it truly means when there is nothing new under the sun. Because our parents been successful doing Easter, doing Thanksgiving, doing birthdays, Mother's Days, Father's Days, Christmas Days, because there have been so much success wrapped up in the abundance of these holidays and worshiping and idolizing them, they don't see no reason to pull away from that. They fought through the heaviest times of these curses. I'm talking about if your parents were born in like in the 50s, they lived through the civil rights movement. They lived through segregation. They lived through racism. And they didn't deter themselves from Christianity or any religion or doing these pagan feast days. And then when they were emancipated because of the civil rights movement and the Civil Rights Act, they feel we are being blessed by continuing to be Americans. That is also a trap. It's the same trap that our people had in the time of being sent to Babylonian captivity. We felt like, oh, if we're worshiping the Queen of Heaven, which is an Egyptian deity, which was Isis at the time, if we're worshiping this and we're being sent in captivity, we want to go to Egypt where we can worship the Queen of Heaven, because this is where we have found ourselves emancipated from the curses. We felt as long as we continue to worship the Queen of Heaven as an idol, when we were prosperous and when we have found ourselves in captivity, we think that, oh, we need to go do this more. We need to worship this idol even more, because it was this idol that kept us in our own country at the time. This is why the Most High has to revisit the sins of Yasharel every 30 to 40 years. Because after a period of time, after an adult lifespan, the laws become less and less observed. The ordinances become less and less observed. And then because the nations that are around about us have always been consistent in worshiping their gods, it became a snare unto us. That's why the Most High said, where I send you, I'm going to make you remove the nations that are around about you. If you do not remove the nations that are around about you, they will become a snare and a stumbling block to you. because he knew these nations wouldn't turn from their gods. If they worship Chemosh, they're going to keep worshiping Chemosh. If they're going to worship Baal, they're going to continue to worship Baal. Why? Because Most High has put spirits of authority to lead certain nations away from him so they could be a rod to the inheritance of Yasharel. That's why he remained certain people to stay in these religions. The reason why people are Christians and they don't leave Christianity is because the Most High has put spirits of authority so people would never leave that religion. Majority of the population cannot leave that religion. They cannot leave the traditions because they need to be the witness of the Most High's power. We have already testified to his power. So we are lucky. We should never be a part of these other nations that he is leading away through the spirit of the authority placed on them. If you are called in these respective nations that have been placed with certain authorities of Ruachs to lead astray, you are double blessed in the nation of Yasharel. We are just simply coming back to our bloodline. You from the get-go, were supposed to be supposedly damned from the beginning. From the get-go, there was already a spirit on top of your nation that would not cause you to leave it. And the fact that he has selected you, just as he selected Ruth, just as he selected Uriah, just like he has selected Uriah to be grafted in, and certain other people, very slim and very few, to be grafted into the nation of Yasharel, you should consider yourself or count yourself doubly blessed. Blessed and double because of that. Where am I? For the relieving of your father, shall not be forgotten, and instead of sins, it shall be added to build you up. For the relieving of your father shall not be forgotten, and instead of sins, it shall be added to build you up. So even in his stiff-neckedness, it doesn't have to be only your father. If you're dealing with a sister, if you're dealing with a mother, if you're dealing with a brother, if you're dealing with a sister, if you're dealing with a son or a daughter, still, for the relieving of your sibling, your loved one, it shall not be forgotten. And instead of sins, it shall be added to build you up. So if they're being stiff-necked, if they're being stubborn with you, work the rock of patience. Over time, relieving them of the doctrines that they follow, relieving them of the spirits of authority that is on their flesh. It may not come off one. It may not come off all at a time. I mean, none of us are Yahusha. We're able to send a legion of unclean ruachs into an animal. Some of us have to go by ruach, by ruach, by ruach. You have to strip and shed down the unclean ruachs that are on your loved one's flesh. That's work. That is the work. But it's added to you. This particular type of work is added to you to build you up. Don't look at it as, my sister is not getting in and she's causing strife and chaos. No. Don't look at it that way. Look at it as, this situation is being used on me to build me up, to make my strength and my weaknesses non-existent in the Ruach. I'm using the spirit of Yahusha, the Ruach of Yahuwah, through the chaos of my loved one, the stiff-neckedness of my loved one, the stubbornness of my loved one, to build myself up. So then, after my loved one is healed or corrected, or however Yah decides that relationship should go, then you can turn yourself and truly walk out that door and be prepared for whatever comes your way. Because you don't have any connection or relationship to strangers. So if a stranger came up to you and say, what do you worship and how do you praise them? And they give you some rebuttal based on the doctrines that they follow, you would be able to answer them in a patient and calm ruach. Something that you need, especially when you go into these debates. If you're trying to save a friend or a distant relative, it would be how you react to their doctrine much more than how your doctrine sounds to them. If you come across brash, harsh, loud, cursing, they're going to say, this can't be the way, because I came to you with the question. I came to you with my doctrine, and I hadn't come to you yelling, screaming, being harsh, and cursing. So what I'm saying is, to build your ruach and how to deal with your loved ones, it is a benefit to you how you deal with the rest of the world. In the day of your affliction, it shall be remembered, your sins also shall melt away as the ice and the fair warm weather. So when the Most High visits you and you're struggling, whether it be a sin, a vice, but he sees through your thoughts, he sees through your heart, and he sees through the timeline of you showing patience, showing honor, showing glory unto your parents and your siblings and those around about you, then you will see the salvation that is promised to you only because of deed. That doesn't make you justified to be saved, but I'm just saying through deed, he will give you grace and mercy. How you treat your parents and how you treat your loved ones. He that forsakes his father is a blasphemer, and he that angers his mother is cursed of Elohim. My son, go on with your business in meekness. So shall you be beloved of him that is approved. The greater you are, the more you humble yourself, and you shall find favor before Yahuwah. I like chapter 3, verses 13 more. And if his understanding fail, have patience with him, and despise him not when you are in your full strength. So when you are in your full strength, which means you know law, statutes, commandments, you know the Torah, you know the pagan feast days that we are not supposed to observe and practice, you know what's the ins and outs of religions and the snares and pitfalls that come with following these doctrines, when you rise up in your full strength, then you can come in patience in the Ruach to truly admonish and reproach and reprove your loved one. So take this lesson with them as a way to build you up. Because once you conquer the people in your own household, truly, everything outside of it is easy. Trust me, everything outside of it is easy. But let me bring you back to Mattityahu 10, verses 37 to 42, and what Yahushua said about family. He that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. So it's okay to love your mother and your father. It's okay to love your son, your daughter. It's okay to love brother and sister. But in no wise are they supposed to usurp the authority or the headship of Yahushua HaMashiach or Yahuwah Elohaka. Not ever. So to appease our relationships with our loved ones, and if we turn from the Torah, that is a no-no. So I don't care how much you love them, how much chaos they bring into we are not to absorb that chaos in order for us, or in order for our ruach and our attention to the law, statutes, commandments be usurped because we have love over a sibling more than the love of Yah and Yahusha. And he that takes not his cross and follows after me is not worthy of me. He that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it. He that receives you receives me, and he that receives me receives him that sent me. He that receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. and he that receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. So if you, being the righteousness of your family or the righteousness of your household, whether it be your household as a husband or in your parents' household as a son, if you are that righteous seed, that righteous branch, then you are inadvertently causing a reward in your house or in your parents' house, because over time, because your family and because your father and mother love you, they brought you into this world, that love is unconditional. Even though they may be frustrated or stubborn or not knowing how to handle the seed that they brought up in their household, now being taught and admonished and corrected into a new life, that doesn't mean they love you less. So you're causing a reward to fall upon that household, upon your family, without you even knowing that, because eventually they will receive you. I know this by example. Even when I was very harsh with my father, even though I'm very harsh with my mother and my brother and sister, and not having a no contact rule for 3.5 years, and then giving them opportunities to contact me, and then me still shunning away from them, they started to receive me more when I came back in a new ruach. They received me because the patience that I had with them. They received me because the gentleness I showed with them. Just as I gave them a chance, they gave me a chance. So when I had them participate in my wedding, their eyes, what I felt, was truly open to that their son was okay. That this wasn't truly a cult. This wasn't a phase. This wasn't just something I was doing. That I was actually living what I was preaching, living what I was doing. That they only understood from what I was doing from the outside, which means all of the drama that I caused online, which it could be, you know, with Dwayne Wade, it could be with celebrities, it could have been with Megan Thee Stallion, it don't matter. They were still hearing what I was saying, but not understanding what I was saying, if that makes sense. They were seeing it, they was hearing it, but they wasn't understanding it. Until they truly saw me in a different apparel, and they saw me with my Ishai. If they heard the words of the man that was marrying us, and he was making it sound as beautiful as it could sound when he talked about the ketubah. When we had the program embossed on the fans, or the, you know, we had fans and we put the program on these fans, so it acted like a double thing. It was the program and also a fan, because it was hot that day. Thinking forward, that's what we did. So they saw everything as an order of a Hebraic ceremony. So they knew that it was more than just a phase. They knew it was more than just a fad or a trend. They knew that I was living this life. And there was others who were living this life with me. There was more witnesses. And I had, you know, of course, Brother Matt gave an awesome prayer. And his wife, Bree, was one of the bridesmaids. So it's, they've hearing and seeing it and understanding, all right, this is truly Yah's doing. This is truly the work of the Most High. So them receiving me, their reward is to have their son back. Their reward is to have that connection, that ease, that peace, and not being in strife. Eventually, if you're dealing with a chaotic sibling or a chaotic mother or a chaotic brother or a chaotic father, trust me, over time, they are paying attention more to your reaction to them than what you actually say out your mouth. They are paying attention to more how you react to them than what you actually say out of your mouth. If you say nothing, just like Yahusha didn't say a whole lot, but his miracles, his deeds spoke for themselves. The way you handle your loved ones will speak louder than anything that comes out of your mouth. How you react to their chaotic behavior is just like a child. That's why Yahushua, when he got, was up there up on that cross, said, "Forgive them. They know not what they do," as if they were children. You have to treat them like children in the Ruach, regardless of how old they are, regardless of how many gray hairs they have in their head or in their beard. You have to treat them like children. This is a completely new experience for them. So everything is reactive. That's all they know, reactive. So the behaviors that you see them portray in front of you, they're looking for a reaction. Because if you are truly walking with the Most High, if you are truly not in this world and following worldly doctrines, you would treat someone as if you are not part of this world. That's the test. That's what they want to see. They want to see if you are truly not a part of this world. And mind you, it is not them. It is a Ruach ruling their motor actions. It is the Ruachs, or unclean Ruachs, attached to their flesh. There's antagonizing you to bring them back into the world, to have a worldly reaction, so they can stay on the path of least resistance. If you show them that you are not of this world, so you're not giving worldly reactions, that will make that Ruach in them extremely frustrated. Well, of course, it has to get worse before it gets better, because eventually they will tire themselves out. Eventually, it will tire them out, because then the conscience starts to eat at their brain. And just because we read in Scripture, and I'm going to go into this later, just because we read in Scripture that when the Most High has used evil Ruachs to either harden somebody's heart or be a liar in the mouth of prophets, does not mean the Most High can't tell his messengers to use a certain Ruach to bring a guilty conscience upon your loved ones, for them to turn to you with hat in hand, humble, and a calm Ruach to receive you more than when you were trying to admonish him or reprove him or correct them through just words. You have to rely on the Ruach for this. These are some things that we just can't do. Mind you, we want to do it all. When we come into this knowledge and wisdom, we want to share it. We want to show people it works, but it is not our job. We have no power to do such. We have no power to wake up the minds out of their prisons. They have to want it for themselves. And two, it has to be okayed or signed off on by the Most High Yahuwah, because it's all working into his plan. He may not want your father to have his eyes awakened at this moment. He may not want your mother, your brother, or sister to have their eyes awakened. He may not even want your sons or daughters to have their minds awakened just yet. That some cataclysm, some canon event needs to happen in order for everything to come into the fullness of his gospel, the fullness of his pleasure, and the full to be the fulfillment of his word. Sorry. It's all on his timing. It's all on his plans. Regardless that we want it now. Like, oh, please, I want our parents' eyes to be open tomorrow so we can finally live and do the biblical feast days instead of these pagan feast days. Trust me, it's all part of his plan. Before he removes the stumbling block and snare, he first has to show you the last minute that is there. So we have to see it in our parents first, for them to understand, like, our children were right. This is where he has opened my eyes. He has to do it, not us. He has to do it. We are only the witnesses and the testimony to his goodness and his greatness. If we saw another Israel, if we saw what we saw in the beginning as far as the awakening, we weren't like, oh, I guess we are going to get woken up. We wouldn't know if we were getting woken up or not. It just happened. You ever notice that we truly, really weren't in a group or in a community all together and somebody snapped their fingers like, all right, now wake up? No, it was different parts in time. Different events happened in our lives, and then for us to recall, this is why we were woken up, because we were meant to see this during our lifetimes. It is a lifetime of reproach and correction. Just like the Most High has said, when he sent us off in captivity, he said that he would not leave us wholly unpunished, that he would correct us in measure. So you have to understand he would also open our eyes in measure. And whosoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name of a disciple, amen, I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. Even giving something cold to drink to the little ones who are on fire. It could be on fire, not, you know, physically, but I'm just saying famished, searching, thirsty, either for knowledge or understanding, because even Yahushua said that if we be not like little children, we can in no wise enter into the gates of heaven. We must be as children, knowing nothing but relying on everything from the Father and the Son. Now let me switch gears into Judges. I wanted to talk about Judges because of righteousness' sake, and to see if we can find or dig out some lessons and what was going on at the time when Yasharel was going into the promised land. And they were told that they needed to remove these unclean nations from doing wickedness. And we'll get into what type of wickedness that was, which is a reason why they put Leviticus 18 in scripture. Judges 1:1. Now, after the death of Yahushua, it came to pass that the children of Yasharel asked Yahuwah, saying, who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against them? And Yahuwah said, Yehuda shall go up. Now, mind you, the one thing I love about the tribe of Yehuda and Yehuda himself, why do you think that the Most High kept choosing Yehuda? Why do you think at the time of the 12 sons when they were alive, that everybody relied or went to Yehuda in the time of war? Because of his warrior-like spirit. Because of his warrior-like spirit, he was called on most of the time. And of course, if you read the book of Yasher, and you discover when Yosef wanted to make his brethren suffer for selling them off to slavery, and you know the whole story about him, of Yosef taking in his youngest brother and not giving them back to his brethren and accusing his brethren of stealing. And the fight, really, the argument really went off between Yosef and Yehuda, and Yehuda screaming at the top of his lungs, and, you know, to the point where everybody in the nation of, or they in the kingdom of Egypt heard, and the women who were pregnant at the time were, what do they call it, were miscarrying because of his loud shrieking, his loud voice. So you imagine this man in battle, screaming and yelling, and the fierceness, and then men running away from him, being just one man. Truly, y'all, I mean, if you read Yasher, truly understand the power of Yehuda and his presence among his brethren in the times of war. So it's understandable why Yehuda is metaphorically a lion or a lion's whelp or an old lion, and who shall rouse him up? And even when the time they came out of Egypt and the Israelite nations or the tribes were scared. They were pressed against the Sea of Reeds, and they didn't know if they should go into the water and drown or go back to Egypt. So when the chariots were coming, it was only Yosef's children, Ephraim and Yehuda, wanted to go back and fight the Egyptians, being not that many, but they wanted to turn back and fight almost 100,000 plus Egyptians. Everybody else wanted to either go back and continue in servitude or go back and plead for their life. But Yehuda and Ephraim was the only two tribes that wanted to go and fight. So Yehuda, knowing this, that, all right, I got a little spicy tribe on the side that I got to deal with. So he sent Yehuda up, and he delivered the land into his hand. And Yehuda said unto Shimon, his brother, come with me into my lot, that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I likewise will go with you into your lot. So Shimon went with them. So Yehuda, not only they so feisty, not only did they want to turn back and fight the Egyptians, they want to fight the Canaanites and also fight the Canaanites when it comes to Simeon's land. So now they want to fight two wars at the same time. And Yehuda went up, and Yehua delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they slew of them in Bezek 10,000 men. And they found Adonai Bezek in Bezek, and they fought against him, and they slew the Canaanites and the Perizzites. But Adonai Bezek fled, and they pursued after him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his great toes. You read these things, like, why would they do that? And then you read further, and Adonai Bezek said, 70 men, or 70 kings, having their thumbs and great toes cut off, gather their meat under my table. As I have done, so Elohim has requited me, and they brought him to Jerusalem, and there he died. So if you're reading Jubilees or Yasher, it says in the manner in which a man has committed a crime, that crime must be added to that man. This shows how 100% Most High is in his judgments. So we should have nothing to fear. We should not be crying online and whining and whimpering over critical race theory, wanting the European to have sympathy for what happened to us while we were in there in these curses, and wanting so bad for the European nation or all of America to receive judgment for what they've done. Trust me, it's going to happen. Trust me, what has been done to us will be done to these other nations. If you aren't opening your eyes, you are missing it. If they flooded the ghettos in the 1980s and 90s with crack cocaine, who do you think is suffering now from the opioid overdoses? Who do you think is suffering from heroin addiction? You understand that they aren't talking about all the opiate or the opioid epidemic like they talked about the crack epidemic? You know why? Because it's their people. If the opioid epidemic had more African-Americans attached to that destruction, it would be an epidemic every single year on TV. They would say African-Americans, Negroes, are 3 times more likely to be opioid addicted. And it would run documentaries on top of documentaries, and then it would say all crime that Negroes commit in this country was due to the opioid epidemic. But because the face of the 1980s crack epidemic is changed over to the opioid epidemic, over to a European-like image, now you don't hear about it. They will never tell you when the curses is coming upon them. They will never tell you when they're losing. So that's why they make you frustrated. Like Paul said, with the foolish nation, he will anger us. That's why a lot of y'all get so frustrated at America, because you only see the brunt of our curses and you think, oh, these curses aren't coming onto these other nations. They are. America is defaulting. America is crumbling. It ain't crumbling for no reason. He is not sending these other nations that have a spirit of authorities on top of this nation for no reason. He's bringing these nations to spoil us. So everything that we have done or have gone through in this country happens to this nation. That's what you're seeing right now. You're seeing another foreign nation, a very small foreign nation, rule over top of this nation that boasts itself as being mighty. They're not going to tell you that they're being ruled over. They're going to make it look like it's their idea that Israel is infiltrating this nation. It's going to make it look like it's their idea, that this is a biblical prophecy that they serve Yasharel. But the Most High is using the synagogue of Satan to destroy and weaken this nation so when this place is at its bottom rung of frequency, then we will be able to triumph and walk across the necks of our enemies, and we will truly ransack this entire nation. But first, everything has to be brought low. Like the Most High said, I will not destroy these nations all at once for you. I will take them out little at a time so the animals around about you don't overpopulate you. So everything has to work and create an immaculate balance for the Most High to actually work. It has to work on his balance. He cannot destroy all of America because all these other nations will find it in their heart, be like, oh, that this nation is destroyed. Then will I jump on and try to kickstart the curses all over again. Like the Most High is saying, nah, that's not happening. I'm gonna weaken these nations over time. I'm gonna take them out little by little. So when the process of me taking them out, you will not be in your weakened state, but you will be in your stronger state when you are here, when you are there to receive these blessings, when you're there to receive the resources at a time when you're going to need it the most. If I do it all now, you will outdo your resources. You will eat up your resources. You will eat up the opportunities and the blessings at the time of where I'm scheduled to visit this earth. Do y'all not truly understand that? You understand everything is done on his timing so that the time that we are in need, that this nation will be destroyed and we will receive the help that's desperately going to, we are desperately going to need when they lock us out of the system. It's based on this timing of a weakened state of America or whatever country that you're in. It's all based on timing. But the Most High is true when he says that whatever you do, it will be done to you. So this king, Adonai Bezek, was sawing off his enemies' thumbs and great toes. So Yasharel must have heard of this. This is what he was doing to kings. And like, all right, let's do it to them. Do it to him. That's justice, judgment. And people and Christians be like, no, you're not supposed to judge. Don't judge. But if you go to Mattiyahu 7, verse 1 through 5, it says, judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. So it didn't say you don't judge. It says if you are not righteous, do not righteously judge. Because if you righteously judge against somebody else and you are not righteous, that means how you talk to this person, whether if you screamed on them, cursed at them, been hard with them, you are going to get the same measure back to you. And this is something that I wish women would truly understand. If you, since accountability seems not to be your strong suit, if you said something to your husband and then your husband follows what you do, but then you, somewhere down the line, are made a liar because of what you said your husband to do in the, you know, previously, he has every opportunity, he has every spiritual right, every spiritual legal right to admonish you, reproach you, reprove you, correct you, whatever words you want to use, and you should not be able to say nothing out of your mouth because it was based on your words first. If you are not going to do what you say, then pretty much get ready to hear you to you. My wife says this sometimes. Oh, you pulling a me on me, huh? I say this too sometimes. Like, oh, you want to pull a me on me? That's when you know. That's why I make sure whatever comes out of my mouth, it ain't nothing shaky about it. I try to the best as I can demonstrate what I say more than me saying it. Because I know our women are like the moon. They come in phases. You have to constantly pour into them. And no matter how much you pour into them, that light won't stay full. No matter how much you try, that light won't stay full. It'll go from full moon, and you just over time, you no matter how many times you pour into it, you'll just see the light decreasing until they get it, until something happens or it blows up in your face. Then you got to see the new moon. Then you got to pour back into them again till they get to the full moon. For a couple days, they good. And then over time, once you leave off from pouring into them, it goes all the way back toward dark moon. And guess what you got to do again? You got to continue pouring into them again. So it's faced with a lot of corrections with our women. But the correction gets harsher for them because they don't understand the things they say out their mouth. And they don't recall when they tell us to do something, and then they don't do the things that they say for us to do. So if you are going to judge, if you're going to correct, make sure you're doing everything you need to do or supposed to be doing. So that same correction, that same judgment doesn't fall upon you. And why behold you the mote that is in your brother's eye, but consider not the beam that is in your own eye? Or how will you say to your brother, let me pull out the mote out of your eye, and behold, a beam is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of your own eye, and then shall you see clearly to cast out the mote out of your brother's eye. That's it. It didn't say not to judge. It says if you're going to do it, you make sure you are correct, and you make sure you live by the words you say. There was a funny video I saw on TikTok where this young lady was telling her husband, if you're the last one in the house, make sure you turn the outside light off. If you're the last one out of the house, you make sure you turn the outside light off. Lo and behold, this woman comes home from work. It's dark. And she goes into the ring in the camera. She goes, oh, I can't see anything. If somebody would just leave the light on. I'm like, bro, this is marriage in a nutshell, because they don't understand. They're so wordy. They don't take accountability of the words that come out of their mouth because they've never been in a situation where anybody has tried them on the validity of their words. So their mouth just runs. But as a man, there's always men watching and listening to reprove you or correct you based on what you say. So, and men are also watching if you are doing what you say or you are not doing what you say. It's not really like that with women. Women are not taking track of other women's words other than when it comes to gossip or back talking or talking behind each other's back. Other than that, women's mouth just run with no count. I wish it was like that movie, Thousand Words, with Eddie Murphy, where you only had 1,000. I wish it was like that with women sometimes, where you only get 500 words a day. And after that, you run out, you run out. It would teach women to be a little bit more selective with what their words are, and a lot selective of where the attention goes when they want to use words. But that will help a lot of women not be hypocrites, is what I'm saying. Now, war certification. This nation needed to be war certified. Obviously, we came out of Egypt. It ain't like we came out, you know, in our own means by fighting the Egyptians. So there was a whole nation after 40 years in the wilderness. It was a whole nation of children that didn't know anything about fighting or protecting themselves or protecting their loved ones or protecting their household. It needed to be a training ground for this. If the Most High is going to use us as a battle axe, shouldn't you fasten your weapon and making sure it's battle ready? When the Most High calls you to be a husband or calls you to be a brother in this walk, a coverer, a strong man, a warrior, if you will, doesn't he need to prove if the weapon works? No man will go into a war with an unproven weapon. If you've been handed a gun, an M16, do you just take that M16 and just get on a boat and just go to war without ever firing a shot? No. The military performs exercises on top of exercises. Even people who die in these exercises, they perform these exercises where they got bullets going over top of their heads. They go under barbed wire. They jump over obstacles. They make sure not only the person, but the weapon that they're using is battle ready. So when it comes to running out these nations and ruling over them, the Most High has to make sure his children, his weapons of war, are battle ready, battle tested. You need to be battle ready and battle tested. You may not need to pick up an axe or a sword or a gun, but picking up that scripture, that is your weapons of war. And you must know your weapons of war inside and out, backwards and forwards. Here a little, there a little, line upon line, precept upon precept. So I'm going to start at Judges 2, verse 17 on down. And yet they would not hearken unto their judges, but they went a-whoring after other Elohim and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of Yahuwah, but they did not so. That is a normal thing with us. And when Yahuwah raised them up judges, then Yahuwah was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge, for Yahuwah sighed. Imagine, y'all, imagine the most powerful creator that created everything. Everything. I'm talking about angels, luminaries, even the creatures behind the veil that we only read about, the firmament, his throne, all of his works. And this man that's over top of us, over top of this firmament, sighed because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. So we would go into worshiping other nations round about us that we did not root out, serving their Elohim. Then when these Elohims become a snare and a stumbling block to us, which he said would happen, we up there complaining and groaning about being tormented, by being trodden down. How true is this in this nation right now? Where people are complaining, mad because they got to work such long hours, complaining that their children don't act right, complaining they can't find a mate, complaining that their household is upside down, complaining, but while still doing Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter, still going to those churches which are overran by Freemasons and BGOs, and still pretending, still belonging to a religion, and still complaining. And the Most High got a sigh because of their groanings. Because the word would tell you, do not belong to a religion. Do not do these pagan feast days. Do not worship other Elohims besides me. And he got a sigh and save you after what he told you not to do. We truly owe it to this man to do these statues, these ordinances. It truly, even the ancient ones, even these new moon feast days, even these new moon offerings, even the sending smoke offerings, burnt offerings, free will offerings, heave offerings, drink offerings, we owe it to this man to damn it get it right. We owe it to him for what he has had to put up with us since our creation. And it came to pass when the judge was dead that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers, and following other Elohim to serve them and to bow down unto them. They ceased not from their own doings, nor from their stubborn way. And the anger of Yahuwah was hot against Yasharel. And he said, because that this people has transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and had not hearkened unto my voice, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Yahusha left when he died, that through them I may prove Yasharel, whether they will guard the way of Yahuwah to walk therein as their fathers did guard it or not. I may prove Yasharel whether they will guard the way of Yahuwah to walk therein. And how are he going to prove us? By continually sending us into captivity to be destroyed over and over again until we got it right. And I think this generation is the generation that finally gets it right. We finally have more understanding than our forefathers and the fathers before us. We finally come to the fullness and the completeness of his struggle over us. That this is the last time the Most High has to sigh. Pathetically so, this is the last time the Most High has to sigh over us because we cannot get it right. So I don't even get upset when listening to Christians or Muslims or Judaism talk out their mouths. They have not been or ever been in a situation like us. They have never truly been proven. And sadly, they won't have, or maybe they will when it comes to the 1,000 years of the reign of Yahushua. Maybe there will be a time where they will truly feel throughout on their entire generations what we had to go through. So they would need to be proven over and over again. But some people won't get that chance. That judgment will creep up on them and swipe them right out of this world. They won't get 30 to 40 years of trying to redo it in their bloodline. They won't get 50 to 60 years and kings after kings after kings or princes after princes after princes to get it right over and over again. They won't have the ability to go in and out of captivity to various nations to get it right. Sadly, they won't have that opportunity. Judges 3, verse 1 through 4. Now, these are the nations which Yahuwah left to prove Yasharel by them, even as many of Yasharel as had not known all the wars of Canaan. So, if you read the book of Yasher, which I want you to read, everybody should read the book of Yasher first. If you are just coming into this walk, these are my recommendations and books that you should read straight through. It should be Yasher, then you go to Jubilees, then you go to Enoch. Then read Wisdom of Solomon and Sirach. Then Ezra, then Baruch. Read them straight through because it will bring you from the past, the present, and the future. Past, present, future, all in one swoop. Because a lot of what Enoch said was the past, present, and future. And a lot of Ezra and Baruch is the past, present, future. And the book of Yasher is just the color commentary of why we are the way we are, and you'll get a sense of who the nations or the tribes are based on the wars of Canaan. Only that the generations of the children of Yasharel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof. Namely, 5 lords of the Philistines and all the Canaanites and the Sinaimites and the Hivites that dwelt in Mount Lebanon from Mount Baal Hermon until the entering in of Hamath. And they were to prove Yasharel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of Yahuwah, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moshe. So the reason why America, Rome, and all these other nations that we've been scattered across the four winds and the four directions, the reason why they have not fully ended, it's because we aren't completely corrected in measure. The Most High has to correct the 144,000 of each tribe that's already out. The 144,000, he's waiting for that number. They all has to come into the truth of who they are as a nation. He has to waken them up, and that's his number. And only he would know when he's come to the completeness or the fullness of this number. And also the Gentiles. There's also Gentiles that he has called. He has to wait till they come to the fullness of that number. So these nations are here to prove us, to make sure we would follow his law, statutes, commandments. And sometimes your family will help you prove you and if you will guard his commandments or not. If you have an unruly wife that is not walking in this Ruach or not walking into the Torah, that is a test to you. To see if you will follow and guard the way, regardless if your woman doesn't want to do it or not. If you are a woman and your man doesn't want to follow away, or if he's struggling following the way, it is to prove you, not him. It's to prove you, to see if you will guard those commandments or not. Judges 3:12, and the children of Yasharel did evil again in the sight of Yahuwah. And Yahuwah strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab against Yasharel, because they had done evil in the sight of Yahuwah. And he gathered unto him the children of Ammon and Amalek, the people who drink blood, and went and smote Yasharel and possessed the city of palm trees. So the children of Yasharel served Eglon, the king of Moab, by 18 years. And when the children of Yasharel cried unto El Yahuwah, Yahuwah raised them up a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Jerah, a Benjamite, a man left-handed, I love that, and by him the children of Yasharel sent a present unto Eglon, the king of Moab, but Ehud made him a dagger, which had two edges of a cubit length, and he did gird it under his raiment upon his right thigh. Now, the reason why they said that he was left-handed, because I'm pretty sure everybody in the kingdom at that time must have all their swords in the right hand. Or if they, you would tell, like, you are right-handed wherever you placed your gun. So if you had a gun and it's open, like Florida right now is open carry, and depending on where you put your gun at, we know this is your dominant hand. But if you are left-handed, people would not know that. They would assume that you would be right-handed. So if you had no weapon, you would be looking for if his right hand or on his right side would have a bulge or a weapon on the right hand or, you know, or so whatsoever. Or if it was on his left thigh, whatever, you would tell. You would tell if somebody's a little bit right hand dominant. But because Ehud was left-handed, he put the dagger on the inside of his thigh, so you wouldn't suspect that this man would bring out a knife from his left hand. Or whatever move he would make, it wouldn't be he would bring out a weapon from his left side, because I'm pretty sure at the time it was more right-handers than it was left-handed people. I'm pretty sure that's like that today. Like, if I haven't looked up the stats, but I'm pretty sure there's more right-handed people in this world than there are left-handed. And he brought the present unto Eglon, king of Moab, and Eglon was a very fat man. And when he had made an end to offer the present, he sent away the people that bore the present. But he himself turned again from the queries that were by Gilgal and said, I have a secret errand unto you, O king, who said, keep silence. And all that stood by him went out from him. And Ehud came unto him, and he was sitting in a summer parlor, which he had for himself alone. And Ehud said, I have a message from Elohim unto you. And he arose out of his seat, and Ehud put forth his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly. Now, let me give you somewhat a close image of this. Remember the Godfather movie when Robert De Niro's character went to visit the mafia boss that not only killed his father, but killed his brother, his older brother, and then blew away his mother in front of him. And he comes back and he asks him, what's his name? And he said, I can't hear because I'm deaf in the ear. And he gets close enough to him. And that's when he took that knife and jabbed it in him and then went upwards on him and then mushed him. It's almost like that. Just imagine it was something like that. And Ehud put forth his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly. And the haft also went in after the blade. And the fat closed upon the blade so that he could not draw the dagger out of his belly, and the dirt came out. So imagine you put a whole knife into this man. Then Ehud went forth through the porch and shut the doors of the parlor upon him and locked them. And when he was gone out, his servants came and they saw that he behold the doors of the parlor and were locked. They said, surely he covers his feet in his summer chamber. And they tarried till they were ashamed, and behold, he opened not the doors of the parlor. Therefore they took a key and opened them, and behold, their Adonai was fallen down dead on the earth. And of course, Ehud escapes, and he said unto them, follow after me, for Yahuwah has delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand. And they went down after him and took the fords of the Yarden and toward Moab and suffered not a man to pass over. And they slew of Moab at the time about 10,000 men, all lusty, and all men of valor, and there escaped not a man. Now, why would they say in this verse, 10,000 men, all lusty, and all men of valor? So not only were these men strong in war, but why mention lusty? If you remember how the kingdom of Moab came to be, where did they come from? They came from the daughters of Lot. When Lot escaped Sodom and Gomorrah, their daughters, for some odd reason, thought all men across the entire globe, across the entire flat earth, they thought there were no more men around. So they thought, in order to preserve seed of their bloodline, they decided to sleep with their father. Imagine what type of emotional disconnection you must have been from living in Sodom and Gomorrah so long that you have no type of moral judgment, no type of moral compass or connection to think that this wasn't right. There's no way in the world that if you were left, you women were left on a remote island with your father to think that, oh, I'm gonna preserve seed from my father and let me sleep with my father because I want a child. None of you, it would never cross any of you guys' mind. Just like any of you fathers, you would never sleep with your daughter in order to preserve your seed or your bloodline. It would never come into your mind. Surviving would only come into your mind. How I'm going to provide for my daughter, or how I'm going to provide for my child so we can survive this. I mean, I got to gather up food. I got to do the whole Gilligan's Island thing. I got to find a way up out of here. Not once does raising up seed enter your mind. But for some reason, that's all they knew in Sodom and Gomorrah is unclean sexual immorality. Being so disconnected because of sex that they didn't see no problem with it. So Lot's children had children by him. So they named them Moab and Ammon. Now, if you know anything about generational curses, then you would know that those unclean sexual water spirits will be attached to those bloodlines. Where do you think Baal Peor is? Baal or Lord of the Opening, which is what the Israelites got in trouble for joining themselves to Baal Peor when they were in the wilderness. They were in trouble for worshiping Baal Peor, Lord of the Opening, a fertility god. This is no different from now, except celebrities are our fertility gods. Sabrina Carpenter, fertility goddess. Taylor Swift, being 35 years old, all of a sudden talking about dick in her album now, is trying to promote herself as a fertility goddess. Rihanna, Beyonce, black women in general in the entertainment industry are used as images or portrayals of fertility goddesses, which is hypersexuality and lasciviousness. So the reason why they mentioned lusty, because all these men of this particular nation had a problem with sexual immorality. Just like the men of valor of Rome, the Spartans, they were homosexual. So they bypassed them to try to show that the Spartan men were like the most hardest male warriors of all time, but they were homosexual. Lusty, if you will. So this is the reason why the Most High removed one of these nations removed. And people are like, why did God destroy these people that did nothing wrong? No, you have to read the scriptures to know why he destroyed them. And if I can go to Moab and them worshiping Baal and Chemosh, these fertility gods, then you got to see and understand why Leviticus 18 was in place as far as law. So let's go through Leviticus 18. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe, saying, speak unto the children of Yisrael, and say unto them, I am Yahuwah Elohim. After the doings of the land of Mizraim, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. And we know Mizraim are the Hamites. The Canaanites are a descendant of Hamites. After the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. Ye shall do my judgments and guard my ordinance to walk therein. I am Yahuwah Elohim. Ye shall therefore guard my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am Yahuwah. None of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am Yahuwah. You should not approach a child. You should not approach your child. Let me correct myself. You should not approach your child or a nephew or a niece or a cousin, anybody related to you. You should not uncover their nakedness. And I guarantee you, a lot of you Negroes or Europeans in general, or all of you come from families that you have a family member or an adult family member that has touched another family member in your household. I guarantee you, a lot of you had this story. And mind you, where does it come from? It came from us intertwining with these other nations that had fertility goddesses intertwined with them. Whether it be Yoruba, whether it be voodoo, it don't matter. It can be all traced right back to Egypt and right back to these gods of Chemish, of Baal, Moloch, which they call a Milcom. But these are gods they use through sex. Sexual immorality. And then they would sacrifice the child after doing these sexual immorality events around the spring equinox. The nakedness of your father or the nakedness of your mother shall you not uncover. She is your mother. You shall not uncover her nakedness. Now, mind you, if he had to put this in there, that means somewhere amongst the Canaanites, amongst the Hamites, they were doing this. I mean, if you look at, what was it? Not Akhenaten, but King Tut. That wasn't his mother and father, brother and sister? A lot of the Egyptians who tried to keep the royal bloodline going were incesting themselves. And this is what the European nations tried to do through the Habsburgs. They're the most mangled bloodline of all in history because they kept doing it. Oh, I mean, I'm talking about the cousins will marry the cousins and then turn around, the children will end up marrying the cousins. So they would keep double incesting themselves and will mangling their bloodline. The nakedness of your sister, the daughter of your father, or the daughter of your mother, whether she be born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness you shall not uncover. Now, mind you, if he had to say this, so it wouldn't be no excuse that, oh, my father left town and had a baby, and then he brought the baby back, and this is my sister now, and then I'll grow up and I start touching her because she wasn't born in this house. He's simply saying, rather it be a stepsister, half-sister, it don't make no difference what type of sister or brother, you do not touch. The nakedness of your, the nakedness of your son's daughter or of your daughter's daughter, even their nakedness, you shall not uncover, for there is your own nakedness. Because they are of your bloodline, you cannot uncover your own nakedness because that nakedness comes from you. Mind you, this is wild that you have to tell people this, but this is exactly what went on in the days of Noah. This is exactly what went on in the time of sexual immorality. It's exactly where we're heading to. Why do you think when the Jews own all these porn websites, and y'all been on porn, men, you've been on porn, and you always graze by our brush pot, even though if it's not part of your genre of when you masturbate, you've seen these storylines of man sleeps with his woman sleeps with her stepson. These scenarios. Why do you think they program you with that? They get it from the days of Babylon, the days of Egypt, the days of Noah. They trying to bring back this sexual immorality because they knew this is what caused judgment. Satan knows this. He knows in order to bring Yah down to destroy the creation that Satan hates, he knows he has to get everybody into the most diabolical versions of sin mentioned in scripture that the Most High torched an entire nation over. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's sister, your aunt. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister, your mother's aunt. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's brother, your uncle. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your daughter-in-law. Like, imagine you have to say this. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your brother's woman. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your woman and her daughter. Neither shall you take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter. Like, I mind you, how perverted are you to go after somebody's child's child? Also, you shall not approach unto a woman to uncover her nakedness as long as she is put apart for her uncleanness. And some of us failed at this. This sounds more like running up in a woman when she on her period. And I'm at fault of this too. I used to brag I had my driving license revoked because I keep running red lights. We used to brag about that. As sick as it sounds, and as sick and dirty as it actually is, we used to brag about that. The reason why men did it, because you knew the woman wouldn't get pregnant while she was on her menstrual cycle. Moreover, you should not lie carnally with your neighbor's woman to defile yourself with her. And you should not let any of your seed pass through to Moloch. Neither shall you profane the name of your Elohim. I am Yahuwah. You shall not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. Neither shall you lie with any beast to defile yourself with. Neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion. Defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled, which I cast out before you. This is the reason why they were destroyed. They were destroyed because of sexual uncleanness. If you read Jubilees and Yasher, Abraham was adamant about telling Yaakov, make sure, my son, you guard yourself against fornication, because this is all these nations would do, fornicating and then destroying the consequences of their fornication. That is why Baal worship, fertility worship, sex worship goes hand in hand when human sacrificing or infanticide, because they want to use the worship of God to cover up the consequences of fornicating. And that's what we've been used to in this nation. When we fornicate or overly fornicate ourselves, eventually we get trapped in having a woman pregnant. And then we got to give her money, Western Union her money, or con her into getting an abortion. We are serving our flesh, serving Baal, and we're not even knowing it. And then bragging about, like, this is a right. We actually made it a right to be able to worship the god Moloch. Women are saying it's their right. It's women empowerment to have the power to worship Moloch. That's all they're saying. Man. So I'm going to continue in the book of Judges, because it's a great book. But I'm gonna finish up with the last two verses of Judges 3. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Yasharel, and the land had rest 80 years. So it wasn't like the Israelites couldn't keep the commandments. They could keep it for a time, but eventually the elders pass on and don't pass down that knowledge, or the generations just by however they were planted and whatever they grew up with, didn't receive the law, and they chose their own actions, and their actions were to worship other Elohim and participate in these sexual immorality practices or events that caused the Most High to be hot with us. And after him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad, and he also delivered Yashrael. If you want to know what an ox goad is, I mean, you obviously could look it up. All it is a stick with like a little claw that hangs out on the top end of it. So like you goad the ox, like the ox ain't doing what you're supposed to do, you would use that to goad him, to make him move. So like prick him. Mind you, this dude's killed 600 men with an ox goad. You know how wild that is? 600 men, one man, with a stick with a tiny claw at the top of it. Demonstrating that it's not the weapon in your hand. It don't need to be an M16. It don't need to be a cannon. It don't need to be a double pump Mossberg. It don't need to be anything in the John Wick trilogies.
It could be something as simple as a pencil or a little pinprick. It ain't about the weapon. It is about what is fashioned or how it was. How is the person holding it fashioned to use it? That is my point. So regardless of where you are in this walk, the Most High, if he chooses you for a mission to use you as a weapon, do not concern yourself. Oh, damn, I'm going against this type of people. I'm going against the mob. I got to go out and buy me a gun. I got to buy me a dozen bullets and I got to go to the shooting range. No. Unnecessary. Truly unnecessary. What he's saying by using Shamgar, he's saying that it doesn't matter what's in your hand. You take whatever you think is going to get the job done, whatever you think is comfortable, you are comfortable with. You don't need to go out to the heavy bag to work it to see what your stroke's going to be, to see if you're going to be ducking or lunging or parlaying and, you know, fencing. I didn't teach you all that. What I'm teaching you is that when you go into war, I'm gonna have you rely on your instincts, but I'm going to be with you in your heart. So you have nothing to fear. You do what you think you have the ability to do, and I will take care of the rest. So we are going to stay in Judges. So I think it's an important book, especially for you men, because it will come a time where this civil war will get cooking and you're going to be nervous. You're going to have anxiety and you're going to think like, oh, I got to go get weapons. I got to get bullets. I got to go to the practice range. I got to go do this. I got to, you know, get all this tactical gear. Mind you, they were farmers grabbing pitchforks and turning pruning hooks into swords. Literally, they were using whatever they were tilling the ground with to produce fruit to give as an offering to Yahuwah. They made them weapons for their own salvation or their own weapons for judgment. So they had nothing to fear. None of the Israelites had to go prepare for anything. When it was time to go, they got up and go. Now, obviously, the weapons of war matched the weapons that were being used in battle. So it wasn't like they were going out there with a Swiss Army knife against chariots of iron and swords. Obviously, they upgraded their weaponry, but they didn't rely on the weaponry to be the device of their salvation. They relied on Yahuwah. And we'll get on into that next episode when I talk about Gideon. And I like talking about Gideon because it's also important how we decide to hear the Most High and how we can try the Most High when we are truly unclear about the mission that he has given us. I'll see y'all next time.